wireless mouse is going crazy on the internet. So since I didn't do my job in getting good material on Sunday, we're going to have to kind of abruptly jump back into chapter 2. And we're going to do our best to get through 2 and as well as 3 tonight. In fact, to help ensure we do that, I'm going to time box this. And I'm going to set a timer for 20 minutes.
When
that is done, we're going to have to move on. So, doesn't mean we have to use all 20 minutes, but we really don't need to go past that. So. Alright, I'm going to set that. Alright, so we're going to jump right back into precious time is ticking away.
Hit the reset on, get the remote and hit the reset.
It's not the projector.
Is it your slides?
Yeah. I don't know.
Escape and launch the slideshow again. Those are 20 minutes.
Somebody set this up, right? Yeah. Okay, well, we'll have to make do for now. But remember, we got into the section, the second half of chapter 2, instructions for men and women. We saw in verse 8 where the instructions to men were to pray everywhere, lifting up, you know, holy hands, whether that's figurative, to be literal if you so choose. But the emphasis there was on the holiness, okay, as well as without anger and quarreling. And then he got into this section starting at verse 9 where he's talking about, he says, likewise. And then he goes into what the women were wearing. He says they should wear respectable apparel, proper clothing, modest apparel. Even gives some examples, you know, braided hair, gold or pearls. You know, basically, you know, stop wearing these things that are expensive or time-consuming to put on or attention-grabbing or gaudy. And wear you know, what's proper and respectable. But was this just an issue of what they were wearing? He emphasizes, again, the kind of a more spiritual quality that went with it. That, remember that rich word we talked about? I think it was eidos. That is this word, modesty, which can mean, in some contexts, can mean, you know, reverence for God. It also has that idea of shamefacedness and regard for others. So that's really what's at the heart of it. Is there a connection between spiritual qualities and what we wear? Well, that's what he says right here, right? That we could profess godliness by the things that we wear. And so he says, with modesty and moderation, profess godliness. So instead of this expensive, gaudy, attention-grabbing clothing, he says replace that really with good works, right? It's almost like you're, instead of those things, you're putting on good works. And that's what truly professes godliness. I don't know everything about the culture there, of women, but in my limited research, it seems as if maybe women had a higher place in society in Ephesus than other places. You know, remember that was where the Temple of Artemis was, and it could have been the cults related to that had women leaders, and so it could have been that women just in general had a higher place in society in Ephesus than other places. We talked about, too, that this may be a group of some of the rich that he addresses later. Maybe some of these women were rich, and based on what we're going to talk about in just a minute, 11 through 15, it may have been that these women also thought there was some air of superiority or some domineering spirit in these women. You know, it could be related, but we'll get into 11 through 15. Yeah, Phil.
Can you talk about the not but structure at all? Okay, so this was super helpful for me. In Matthew 10:28, Jesus says, do not fear man, but fear God, right? So yeah. Paul is saying, not braided hair, then verse 10, but what is proper. And Paul does this a ton. You'll pick up this not but structure over and over. And when Jesus did it, it doesn't mean it's sinful to be afraid of a lion, or sinful to be afraid of a quarterback coming to crush you. Like, it's a contrast. Not this, but this instead. And so in this verse, he's using a not but structure to say, de-emphasize the external come back and re-emphasize the godliness internal.
That's right. Yeah, re-emphasize. Yeah, that's right. With good works, right? Yeah, it's almost like a replacement. Mm-hmm. Mourning ourselves.
So not but. And right. Paul does it a ton.
Yeah, it's helpful as Bible students to see that contrast and the way he uses that. So let's get into 11 through 15 of 1 Timothy 2. Paul says, "Let a woman learn in silence with all submission, and I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. Nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control." So this is a section that, you know, there are a variety of conclusions that are reached by others, and it was a little difficult, you know, for me to figure out the best way for us to discuss this, best way to present this, and so I landed on just taking some of those conclusions and throwing several of them up there and talking through them. I'll go ahead and let you know that some of these we can just immediately reject. I'm going to put them up there anyway. We can talk about them briefly, but we're going to immediately reject some of them. Some of them are a little bit more plausible than those. So, potential conclusions for this section. One is God sees women as inferior. This is obviously one we're going to reject immediately, right? We just saw earlier in this chapter, you know, God desires all people to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth, you know, men and women. We think about how Jesus treated women, right? When he was on the earth, with respect and compassion and even commending their faith, you know, on several occasions. So we're going to throw this one out pretty quickly.
Can I make a point on that before you leave it?
Sure.
I have some acquaintances who want to dismiss the whole section because Paul wrote it, and Paul is obviously anti-woman. There you go. So, I'll shut up.
No, you're right, yeah. If you just do Google searches on Paul, a lot of, you know, these words appear in a lot of, right? Was Paul a misogynist? Or did he see women as inferior? So, we look at passages like Galatians 3:28, where he says, "Neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you're all one in Christ Jesus." So obviously, in Christ, he saw, you know, male and female as the same. And you see passages like Philippians 4, where he talks about his companions. "Desire you also, true companion, help these women who labored with me in the gospel, with Clement also, and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life." So, does it sound like Paul sees women as inferior? It certainly does.
Well, even in this book, he talks about Lois and Eunice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right. Well, three widows. Those are really widows and all.
Yeah, so that argument is just based on the fact that they don't like Paul's teaching. Yeah. And in light of today's culture, you know, that's the only conclusion you could draw.
Additionally, a contrast is made.
Not like you can find a misogynist argument somewhere. People
true, but a distinction is made between what they would perceive as Paul's opinion of women, mm-hmm. and what they perceive Jesus' opinion of women is.
Yeah.
And they see a difference. So they can't go to a saying of Jesus, you know, can't go to the Gospels and see where Jesus said women should keep silent, for example.
Right, yeah. Paul just went out on his own.
Right. They see something contrary in his teaching to what they
I mean, you know, and the thing is that people have questions. There were questions at the location in Ephesus and other places. Mm-hmm. So I've always viewed the epistles as sort of, okay, we're Christians. Now, how do we behave? What does it mean to be a Christian?
Yeah.
So that Paul gets into some of those specifics of that location.
Yeah.
And Jesus wouldn't have gotten into, obviously.
Right. Because, I mean, for most of his time on earth, the church hadn't been established yet.
Yeah.
There's some differences there. And, I mean, you know, as you, you know, I guess probably getting ahead of you, maybe not. I'm not quite up to Clayton's level. But he does give some logic. Why does he lay out what he's saying? And he gives a reason. Now, you can argue with that, but that's, you know, he has his reasoning of why he's saying what he's getting ready, why he says what all he says.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And because, like you said, you know, he does address issues in specific churches, like I think he's doing here. So then, the argument could be made only applies to that time and culture, right? In Ephesus and at that time period. You know that, okay, so if that was the norm, that women were seen as lower in society, that Paul is just really encouraging them to conform to that social norm. What do you think about that? What's the basis of his argument, like Danny was alluding to? Yeah, Jason.
He goes back to creation.
Goes all the way back to creation.
So it's a time where there was no culture. I don't fully understand his argument, but I at least understand that it goes back to creation and some time when there was not culture. I'll just add also to the previous point, as far as like Paul versus Jesus or whatever, Jesus also was teaching the Jews, and my understanding is that this was the practice among the Jews too. So like that wouldn't have really been an issue so much among the Jews, but just another thought there.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with that.
Yeah. So why did he say to the rich, you shouldn't be high-minded? Why did he say to the poor, you shouldn't desire to be rich? Why did he say to people who don't receive an accusation against them? Is it possible that that's because there were problems about that?
Yes.
Like, why did he give this teaching? Is it possible that they actually, instead of being the cultural norm, you know, that he was teaching here, that the cultural norm was not what he was teaching, and he was having to correct it. It seemed to me that the argument could be stood on its head and say, why is this section in there unless there was a problem with this?
Yeah.
And that is out of the culture, there was a, as you said earlier, the priestesses of Diana, or, you know, other things that might have created pressure within the church not to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have been because of the culture, maybe Ephesus, because of the goddess worship, as well as maybe, you know, through wealth or something like that. Maybe there was that, you know, that era of superiority. So, but like you said, Jason, he goes all the way back to the beginning, right? Which was probably further removed from Paul than we are from Paul, right? If I've got the dating correct. I mean, it's over 2,000 years. He goes all the way back there as the basis for his instructions, right? Not anything cultural. We go all the way back to the beginning where he says, you know, Adam was born first, then Eve. Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. So this is the basis for Paul's instructions. Adam was formed first, then Eve. So even before the fall happened, this is how God set it up, right? From the very beginning, then he also asked, of course, that the woman was deceived first and fell into transgression. So this is the basis for his teaching about men and women. But this isn't received very well. It's not received well at all, especially today. Because, you know, women may say, well, you know, this is really limiting, right? This is really limiting on my abilities, and, you know, I'm capable of so much more than this. And I would tend to agree with that, right? Wouldn't there be women here who probably have good leadership abilities and would serve as great elders if it were up, you know, if it was Jake's wisdom? But you know, this is how God set it up in the beginning, so we have to trust His wisdom. I meant to say, so I think what He's doing here is Adam was born first in Eve, so you know, at that time Adam was given that role of headship. Right, so you have this role of headship. Adam was formed first, then Eve was formed from him. And then the woman was deceived, fell into transgression. You remember the curse that was given to Eve?
Pain for the childbirth.
Pain in childbirth.
Your desire shall be your husband.
Desire for your husband, and he shall rule over you, right? So if she was given, if he was given the role of headship, she was given that role of submission, as well as that role of childbearing, managing the home. And so, that's why women think, well, wow, that's really limited. You know, I'm capable of so much more than that, but we have to trust
God. So are we saying that the reason he brings up the deception and the transgression is because of the curse that it brought about?
Yeah, because the link to...
I didn't mean to say the curse. I mean, if we're taking that next step and saying, well, the reason that he's talking about the women being deceived and falling into their destruction is because she now has this burden of this curse and she's going to have desire for her husband and he's going to rule over her. So why doesn't it say that? I don't understand why we have... Why is the deception relevant? So verse 13 makes sense. I get that. Adam was formed first, mm-hmm. and you have this sort of order of authority, I suppose. And Eve created for the purpose of helping him. That makes sense.
Right.
Why is deception, for being deceived, relevant here? I don't understand that.
Yeah, that's you know, part of the... That's part of the curse. That was part of what... You know, she was given from that curse, right?
All part of the same. The hierarchy, if you want to call it that, that's the wrong word probably, but it was established before the curse.
The headship.
Right, the helper role, right. That was established before the curse. It had nothing to do with her being deceived first.
Yeah.
Even if she had never been deceived, we would still have that.
So you're saying, if this was not there, that this would still... Man would have the role of headship, and the woman would have the submissive role. And I think you're right. I think that's what 1 Corinthians 11 would say, right? The woman was formed from man.
Right.
Okay, so if you take this out...
Second must mean something different. Verse 14 must mean something different than to just draw us to that curse as another...
Yeah, I don't think it draws to the curse. It is, okay, why... You have leadership, right? So why is Paul saying, he's giving his set of points of why it is set up the way it is. So do you want a leader who is deceived or can be deceived?
So that's a possible reason.
Right. I don't think the deceived has anything with the curse. I don't know how you draw that.
The curses were given, right?
We're given, but that's not what the deceived... She wasn't cursed. I mean, the deceiving occurred before any kind of curse.
So you think that it's evidence of the man, or Adam specifically, his greater ability to avoid being deceived?
Well, there's many cases where men have been deceived, but I'm just saying,
yeah.
I don't see where... Well, I guess under... Yeah, submission. Okay, I see where you're kind of coming. I guess.
And the transgressions mentioned here, and there's a link, obviously that links to the curse, and then he brings up childbearing in verse 15, right? So that's linked in as well. So, you know,
seems like we got to look at the first word that starts in verse 13. It says, "For Adam was formed first." That means because something came before that, which was, I do not permit a woman to teach or have authority over a man, but to be in silence. For Adam was formed first. So there's a reason why he's mentioning that.
Yep.
And I think we go back to the very beginning because there's a hierarchy, a headship, that's established that was meant to be continued. And like you said, we could say, well, there's... we could change that, or a woman could be just as smart as a man, or whatever, but God established that, and he had a reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's not a clearly defined role, it doesn't mean that one is inferior to the other, it just means that there's different roles.
It means they're distinct, right?
Right.
That's the order he set up, right?
Yeah. That's verse 13, but yeah. I'm still stuck on 14. I wonder what Catherine says.
Yes,
your statement right there says the woman walks to church. So does that imply
that's,
that?
That's from the verse, yeah.
It says, 9:14 says, Adam was not deceived.
Yes,
Adam was not deceived.
Right.
But the woman being deceived.
Right.
But
you said the word
first. First.
Yeah, it's almost like he was deceived, but actually he just then full of, like, this is Philip's opinion, I'm just saying it's an opinion, but I think that verse 13 is talking about this order that you've put, and I think verse 14 is talking about influence. Eve used her influence to lead Adam into sin, and women are having a less influential role because a wolf... Eve misused her influence. I think, to Clayton's question, that that's the actual connection. Now, totally true. We can look at lots of examples where men abuse their influence. But contextually, I think that is the connection. Verse 12 is about positions of influence, and verse 14 is an example of how she used her influence. I think that's the bridge.
Yeah,
yeah. I can. So I don't see anything about her influence. It just seems to be saying, I mean, here is a thought that what it's describing is what happens when that leadership is not exercised. The woman was deceived, and she sinned. Adam was not deceived, and he still sinned. Mm-hmm. Right? And so if he was there standing beside her when Satan was there, why didn't he stop it? If he wasn't there, why wasn't he? You know what I mean? It's kind of one of those, I think it's an illustration of how the story can go wrong.
When the roles are not held up and executed properly.
Beguiled is a passive verb. She was beguiled. She didn't beguile anybody.
She's a gay man.
Yeah, she was.
And he just said.
Yeah. And in fact, I'm not sure it's to his credit that he wasn't deceived and stealing.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed to me that's almost an illustration of how things go wrong without the proper leadership and exercise.
Yeah, I can follow those points. But he's going to get back to her role in bearing children, I think, in verse 15. So I think that element of the curse does come up. But I can follow your points on that. All right, so, yes, go ahead.
Can I have an opinion, too?
Yeah, sure.
So this is how it makes sense to me. Clayton was asking, like, why didn't Paul just say that this is part of the curse? I think he is saying that. Like, he is pointing back to that. Mm-hmm. So in his own Paul way, which Paul always has his way of doing what he does, it does seem like he's pointing back to that. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm in line with Philip's opinion on what's going on. It seems as though within the curse, there's something in there that says, you're going to want to be in charge, and you don't get to be in charge. And this is speaking to, I see there seems to be a problem there with y'all wanting to be in charge, and let's remember back, you don't get to be in charge.
Yeah, right.
And that's, you might be able to say it better, you could probably say it with 1,000 more words than whoever it is that's actually, you know, whatever, but you don't get to. So
that's how it's set up.
That's, yeah. And it is, like, to Marty's point, it does seem to be that he is speaking against whatever the culture was. Yeah. That if the if they were all falling in line, why would you need to address it?
Yeah, otherwise it's just
random. So I don't know. That's how, like, having heard all the arguments as a female on both sides, like, my whole life, and hearing, you know, people say what they say about Paul, and say what they say about Christianity, and say what they say about the church, and say what they say about the patriarchy, and all the things. That's how it has made sense to me. I think he is pointing back to the curse and to the results of that through pointing back to that. And I don't want to read too much into it, but I think that would have been in Paul's head, and that would have been their head when they heard Adam, Eve, deception, transgression, therefore, all the other stuff that y'all know about.
Yeah. Alright, two more, then we gotta go.
Well, the whole purpose of what Paul is writing is for men and women to get back to being spiritual. Mm-hmm. So to keep it simple, it's all against what human nature will make a person do. So you look at every culture of people and look at women in all those cultures, human nature is the same. They all want that place or to do something beyond whatever this role is. But to be a spiritual woman in the image that God made women to be, this is his instruction. So do you want to gratify the flesh or follow the spirit? You want to truly be a spiritual woman like Sarah that God wants you to be, this is what you do. Anything else you think you want to do?
Yeah.
That's something else.
Right. This is his plan, right? His whole.
Yeah. Good point, Doug. I was just going to add, and I know in other places that Paul adds stuff about, you know, you should ask your husband, your own husband at home and stuff like that, right? Yeah. And I think just a caution for us as men and for the leaders that there's a situation that is very prevalent in our culture that was not very prevalent, not so much of an issue in their culture, which is a lot of single women who are, you know, older and not children anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think those women are especially vulnerable and need some special attention in this kind of a context because they don't have a husband to, you know, go and talk with about these things. And so I think, you know, maybe as leaders, like, we need to be especially careful to, you know, kind of make sure that their concerns are heard and that they're taken care of and everything.
Yeah, good thought. I'm going to have to skip through some of these. Women should not teach at all. You can through passages where women are teaching, older women, the younger women, Priscilla and Aquila, they go both go teach Apollos. When groups of men and women are gathered for Bible study, the man should take the formal role of teacher. I think that's the conclusion. Hopefully we can all arrive at is being taught here. When groups of men and women are gathered for Bible study, the woman should not speak at all. I'll just briefly say the passage in 1 Corinthians 14 where it talks about a woman should not speak during the context of the assembly. It's actually a different Greek word there used. I think it's something along the lines of not speaking, holding silent. Whereas the New King James use of silence in verse 11 is more the idea of quietness. It's actually the same word that's used in 2 Thessalonians 3. It talks about working quietly, you know, so should we work without talking? Well, no. Different words there, so I don't think that that's a conclusion that we can...
I think it's the same word from earlier in the same chapter.
Quiet, peaceful life. Quiet, peaceful.
Cooperative.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, what I was just saying. So, alright, so maybe the most challenging part of it, this teaching only applies in the Bible class setting. It's not what I'm saying, I'm just saying that's a potential conclusion that one could arrive at. Because you look at verse 12, and I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. So, there's obviously clearly a context here of teaching and learning. But he also does say in that verse, or to have authority over a man. And so as we think about, okay, well, all right, what does that mean? I don't know that I have all the answers, but we have to look at what the verse says, especially at the end. So, you know, the contrasting phrase he uses, the end of verse 12, he says, to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence, or this quietness word, right? So whatever that does mean, it can't be at the compromise of this quietness, right? This quiet spirit. Hopefully we would all agree with that, right? So maybe the question becomes, well, is a woman's quiet spirit, is that only restricted to when men and women are gathered together for Bible study or in the assembly?
As opposed to like a workplace or something?
As opposed to anywhere, right? I mean, we see passages like 1 Peter 3. We talk about meek and quiet spirits. So there's nothing that says that a woman's quietness and submissiveness and you know, the meek and gentle spirit is restricted to when men and women are gathered together. Does that make sense? And so the question becomes, well, what does that mean for, like you said, the workplace? What does that mean for a woman who's a manager or a director or a leader of the PTA or president of the homeowners association or a professor? What does that mean for those situations? Can a woman be in those positions and still have the meek and quiet spirit that the scriptures talk about? I believe they can. But I do think that it requires careful consideration for the woman. Can they be in this role and still have the kind of spirit that the Bible talks about? Again, I don't have all the answers for all the situations and all the potential applications, but I do think careful consideration has to be given in all those situations to whether can I keep this quiet, submissive spirit. Because unfortunately, you know, women have gotten to, you know, positions of authority, I'll just say CEO for an extreme example, by being, you know, bold and brazen and domineering and, you know, a different kind of personality than I think the scriptures would call for. So we really have to be careful. Again, I don't have, you bring up a specific situation, I'm not going to be able to give an answer probably, but I think a careful consideration has to be given. So
how many inches above the knee can you dress it? And I ask that question because I think sometimes we would really like to have a specific, you know, measure, tape measure, and you know, how tight do the yoga pants are they allowed to be, and how much of them can be, you know, transparent, and all that. And the answer is, it's very, there's specific guidelines in here, it's very specific, and that is, go find a woman that you believe is an example of someone professing godliness and dressed like her. You know what I mean? And I think the same thing applies. Can you not teach in the school? Can you not run the PTA? Well, maybe, you know, the meek and quiet spirit, you'll find a woman who is known for that and imitate that pattern. As opposed to, let's try to draw a line so we'll know how far we can go and not go past it. And that's a guideline for all Christians and, you know, almost all the moral constraints.
It sort of goes to, you know, how do you do something and why do you do it?
Right.
I've been using the word quiet a lot too, though. I see a difference in the meaning definition of silence in quiet. I think quiet means not speaking. I think it means not disruptive or not, you know, stirring things, you know, not being controversial, that kind of stuff.
That's what I was trying to point out on the other. I had to go through it fast. I apologize, but there are different words. One is not speaking, right? New King James says silence in 11. I think other translations say quietness. So yes, more of that peaceable, quiet, gentle. Yeah. So you're right. There's a difference.
Number one, you're doing a great job tackling all of this, and it is okay that we study elders and deacons all the time. But I'll say this, like, there's a matter of conscience. There's a matter of conscience, and I have preacher buddies that they believe this applies in all circumstances across the board, and their wives have adopted very limited roles of leadership or influence in the public sphere, because that's where their conscience is. I'm more in the camp of it's more restricted to religious settings, and so I don't, like, Tracy has her master's degree and can teach in a college, and that would not bother my conscience. But can we worship together and respect each other's conscience? I hope so. Like, absolutely. So there's going to be some judgment and a matter of conscience in some of this. And you're going to have different Christians that have a strong reason for how they're viewing the context.
Yes, sir.
Just another wrinkle to throw in this. I think there are times where all Christians, including women, are taught to be bold. So, for example, in Acts 3, is it, or 4, where they pray for boldness, you know, I think they're asking for God to help them all to be bold, men and women, to speak boldly. And I think there's a place for that, for men and women to do that.
Priscilla had a, you know, measure of boldness.
And then I think there's also, I mean, Jesus says, blessed are the meek, and I don't think he just meant blessed are the meek women, but blessed are the meek men and women.
Right.
So there's a place and time for both men and women to be meek. And he even says earlier up here to, you know, quiet, peaceful and quiet lives. Again, I think he's referring to men and women there.
Yeah.
So just another kind of thing to consider.
Okay. Yeah, this discussion don't need to lose this, the importance of meekness in general, right?
Well, I think with everything, you got to have a just word. So it's like that whole thought, if you dump your fellow in a pit on the Sabbath, would you get him out? Instead of Aquila and Priscilla talk more accurately.
Policy.
Yeah, so it's kind of like women can't teach.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Timothy's grandmother and mother taught him.
That's right.
So it's more of a, do you want to be a ruler? Do you become Demetrius or, you know, the guy in 3 John or whatever?
Yep.
Where you want to be preeminent in the church.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you brought Lois and Eunice. You know, who was more important, Lois and Eunice or Timothy? I mean, they taught him what he knew, right? And Timothy, look at the things he's doing now, so.
Yeah. This is sort of offhanded, but I mean, I think, you know, what a gift to be able to teach other women.
Yeah.
And to be able to form little thoughts in little heads, and to say that because you're limited to only teaching, I mean, more than half of the population.
4 billion people.
Well, if you're talking about women and children,
right.
Then that's incredibly anti-woman to say that that's not good enough. In a sense, yeah. To say,
yeah,
you know, that,
good, you, can do,
you know, that's a gift. And even to Jason's point about the single women, that's something where the other women need to be looking out for those women too. You know, it's not, I appreciate the idea that the leadership would look out for those women who don't have husbands, but honestly, like, we need to look out, like, I need to look out for those women and be comfortable teaching them and talking with them and serving them in that way. Not, you know, leading them, but serving in that way.
Yeah, it's unfortunate and it's sad. I think that even our brethren sometimes, but I mean just here, but, you know, can sometimes feel limited or feel discouraged, you know, that and just fail to see the good that you were talking about. They can be that, right? It shouldn't feel diminished.
Well, that's the message of our culture. I mean,
that's the problem.
If you feel tension in the room now, my question to you, is that because of our culture or because the Bible teaches it? What's creating this tension that maybe some are feeling about? Is it because we've been influenced by the world to believe you're not in a position where you get to call the shots, you're going to be abused in this fallen world? Yeah, that's, to me, that's it.
Yeah, it's tension.
And it makes me angry that we feel this tension because I think it's the world and the perception. And of course, it's about authority, really, as well. Who's kind of convincing us that you're going to be abused or run over? And guess what? Probably true, right? According to Jesus.
Yeah.
And you're not important, and that's the way the Gentiles view it. That's the way their model of leadership and survival, according to Matthew 10. Nobody here makes me angry, but the influence of the world.
Yes. Yeah.
And because I feel the same tension. It's the world seeping in from
what we face. Yeah, Greg.
It would be interesting to me to see what a letter from the Apostle Paul written to the church today would be like, and all the things that our culture represented. What would that look like? Beyond that, I'm sort of thankful that we do have the capability that we do with the women in this congregation and the women in the church that can teach. There was a lot of early history in this country that could be read, and there were congregations that were nothing but women. Good ladies that worship God on Sunday. And you can find stories where visitors with men would go into these congregations as a visitor, and then they would be serving the Lord's Supper, leading the singing, leading the prayers, preaching the sermon, because they respected the very thing that we're talking about right here.
Right, yeah.
So is the capability needed? Absolutely.
Yeah. Respect for how God has designed it, right? The distinctness. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. Like, you know, for us to think about the shoe on the other foot, we have to use our imagination. Like, I'll never know what it's like to be a woman. A woman will never know what it's like to be a man. And I think in those situations, you got to trust God. And you understand that God knows what's best for each of us. And Paul even wrote, like, there's certain things a man is called to do that a woman is not called to do. It said that she should continue in the way to rear her children and teaching them, you know, to love God. And,
yes.
You know, that's her duty. Whereas the man have to go fight this fight. And, you know, it's a spiritual battle. It's spiritual for all of us.
Sounds like you're trying to explain verse 15 for us. Verse 15, nevertheless, she will be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. perhaps a little bit of confusion maybe on the words used here. I know, you know, is the she in 15, is it talking about a woman? Is it talking about Eve? I think some translations use women there.
Mm-hmm.
New American Standard says women there, so
women, plural.
Women. Yeah.
I don't.
Women where?
Where?
I'm sorry. Instead of says nevertheless, women will be saved. I think the New American Standard says that, but New King James says she. So again, I don't know if that's talking about a woman or talking about Eve, but. So she'll be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith, love, and holiness with self-control. So, okay, just talking about a woman, I think it is. Is there some alternate means of salvation that he's laying out here? I think we're pretty clear that's not the case, right? So what is he saying?
That's godliness for a woman.
What is?
This behavior.
Raising children?
Yeah.
Well,
and love and holiness and self-control, and you know, he spoke of the danger of young women was gossiping, and Satan had taken control of some of them, and you know, the whole danger of a woman is different than the danger for a man. You know, if you say who gossips, most people will say women,
yeah.
Right? But it's a whole different mindset, and he's protecting women against the things that they deal with.
Yeah.
And whereas the man, he's saying, for young men to know God.
Right. Yeah, I think what he's saying, so he's not saying, you know, that there's this ultimate means of salvation. If I don't have kids, you know, how can I be saved? But he's saying that women will be saved through, you know, fulfilling this role, as opposed to the role of headship, right? So this is the role that's given down in the curse, that she would bear children, and I think that's just used to speak larger about, you know, managing the home. But she'll be saved or preserved, some translations use, through following this role, you know, that God gave to women. If they continue, I know the day is a little weird too, is that talking about the children? Is it talking about the woman? I think it's talking about the woman. Does it apply to the raising of kids? I mean, certainly there are applications there as well. So.
I think as children, you love your father for different reasons than you love your mother. Mm-hmm. Right? Your mother, you learn different aspects of life from your mother. You learn other aspects of life from your father. And you love them for teaching you what their role was. Right?
Right.
Because I don't love my mother the same as I love my mom. But I respect them both for
yeah. Right, yeah, I think, you know, she'll be saved in following this role if she continues in the spiritual qualities that are still expected of her, right? Faith, love, and self-control. Not just managing the home, but also continuing in those spiritual qualities. So. Any other thoughts on elders? Or
so I have another. I have another source of anger in a way.
Yeah.
And that is the reason this is so hard now in our society and others, probably all the time,
yeah.
Is that men have fulfilled that prophecy, that curse, that is, we have a tendency to be abusive when we're older. And so when you live in that world, a natural reaction is, of course, to try to be defensive or to try to find some protection against that, which is often to try to be in a position of power or some, you know, degree. So that's the other thing. We're in a fallen world. That's why this is hard.
Right.
Not because God gave us limitations that are not best for our nature, yeah. But because, and I'll look around today, I mean, how many of the Me Too movements have been men abused by women? You know, how many of those guys have come forward? You know, and if there's an exception, I think it proves the rule. But you understand what I mean? I understand this, and I say that it's the fallen, sinful nature, not mankind in this case, masculine from
males.
Right? That are the reason for the insecurity, and that's just. There are a lot of other things wrong with the world too, by the way. That's not the only one.
No,
that's one thing that makes it harder. And so there's a source of anger.
And men abusing that headship role, you know, is just as much a perversion of what God wanted as it would be for a woman to.
And we all may feel oppressed politically or whatever. A long reaction to fight back with carnal power in whatever that role is. Just in the same way.
I guess a little bit off but on this, but kind of the whole thing is, you know, that how do you translate that passage that, you know, apparently a more accurate is the she, whereas some more interested in putting in the interpretation will put the women in.
So she shall be saved is one Greek word, it's third person singular. There's no pronoun, but it's implicit in the word.
Right.
They continue is third person plural. And there's no pronoun, it's implicit in the verb abide and continue. Whatever that's more confusing to me than this.
Yes, yeah, so it could be that he's still talking about Eve there in the day of
right.
Children.
It is confusing, yeah, especially in that. Yeah. But, you know, how then do, you know, when you're looking at a translation, I'm actually, you end up looking at a bunch of them, mm-hmm. is that, you know, I feel less comfortable with someone who goes ahead and makes the decision rather than at least setting me up where I have to start looking at Greek words and dig in and try to understand a little bit better.
So the American Standard got it right. Is that what your point is?
I'm just saying that
it makes
you have to go look. Whereas if they go ahead and decide on the interpretation they want, which kind of makes it a little bit easier to understand the passage, but then had they really done that correctly, and then they can get on other passages really carried away.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll
your box so far.
We'll catch up.
You should have been thinking outside of the box.
I got one time.
Start moving.